There was something in his closet, he said. Sometimes at night, his closet door would swing open, and he would see it in there, something with yellow eyes that wanted to eat him up. Donna had thought it might have been some fallout from Maurice Sendak's book, Where the Wild Things Are. Vickard wondered aloud to Roger, but not to Donna, if maybe Tad had picked up a garbled account of the mass murders that had taken place in Castle Rock and had decided that the murderer, who had become a kind of town boogeyman, was alive and well in his closet. Roger said he supposed it was possible. With kids, anything was possible. And Donna herself had begun to get a little spooked after a couple of weeks of this. She told Vic one morning in a kind of laughing, nervous way that things in Tad's closet sometimes appeared moved around. Well, Tad did it, Vic had responded. You don't understand, Donna said. He doesn't go back there anymore, Vic. Never. He's scared to. And she had added that sometimes it seemed to her that the closet actually smelled bad after Tad's bouts of nightmare, followed by waking fear, like an animal had been caged up in there. Disturbed, Vic had gone into the closet and sniffed. In his mind was a half-formed idea that perhaps Tad was sleepwalking, perhaps going into his closet and urinating in there as a part of some odd dream cycle. He had smelled nothing but mothballs. The closet, finished wall on one side and bare lathing on the other, stretched back some 8 feet. It was as narrow as a Pullman car. There was no boogeyman back in there, and Vic most certainly did not come out in Narnia. He got a few cobwebs in his hair, that was all. Donna had suggested first what she called good dream thoughts to combat Tad's night fears, then prayer. Tad responded to the former by saying that the thing in his closet stole his good dream thoughts. He responded to the latter by saying that since God didn't believe in monsters, prayers were useless. Her temper had snapped, perhaps partly because she had been spooked by Tad's closet herself. Once, while hanging some of Tad's shirts in there, the door had swung quietly shut behind her, and she'd had a bad 40 seconds fumbling her way back to the door and getting out. She had smelled something in there that time, something hot and close and violet, a matted smell. It reminded her a little of Steve Kemp's sweat after they finished making love. The upshot was her curt suggestion that since there were no such things as monsters, Tad should put the whole thing out of his mind, hug his teddy, and go to sleep. Vic either saw more deeply or remembered more clearly about the closet door that turned into an unhinged idiot mouth in the dark of night, a place where strange things sometimes rustled, a place where hanging clothes sometimes turned into hanging men. He remembered vaguely about the shadows the streetlight could throw on the wall in the endless 4 hours that followed the turn of the day, and the creaking sounds that might have been the house settling, or that might, just might, be something creeping up. His solution had been the monster catechism, or just the monster words, if you were four and not much into semantics. Either way, it was nothing more nor less than a primitive incantation to keep evil at bay. Vic had invented it one day on his lunch hour, and to Donna's mixed relief and chagrin, it worked when her own efforts to use psychology, parent effectiveness training, and finally blunt discipline had failed. Vic spoke it over Tad's bed every night like a benediction as Tad lay there naked under a single sheet in the sweltering dark. "Do you think that's going to do him any good in the long run?" Donna asked. Her voice held both amusement and irritation. This had been in mid-May, when the tensions between them had been running high. "Ad men don't care about the long run," Vic had answered. "They care about fast, fast, fast relief, and I'm good at my job."
"Yeah, nobody to say the monster words. That's the matter. That's a lot the matter,"
Tad answered now, wiping the tears off his cheeks in disgust and embarrassment. "Well, listen," Vic said. "They're written down. That's how I can say them the same every night. I'll print them on a piece of paper and tack them to your wall, and Mommy can read them to you every night I'm gone."
"Yeah, will you?"
"Sure," said I would.
"You won't forget?"
"No way, man. I'll do it tonight." Tad put his arms around his father, and Vic hugged him tight. That night, after Tad slept, Vic went quietly into the boy's room and tacked a sheet of paper to the wall with a pushpin. He put it right next to Tad's Mighty Marvel calendar, where the kid couldn't miss it. Printed in large, clear letters on this sheet of paper was The Monster Words for Tad. Monsters, stay out of this room. You have no business here. No monsters under Tad's bed. You can't fit under there. No monsters hiding in Tad's closet. It's too small in there. No monsters outside of Tad's window. You can't hold on out there. No vampires. No werewolves. No things that bite. You have no business here. Nothing will touch Tad or hurt Tad all this night. You have no business here. Vic looked at this for a long time and reminded himself to tell Donna at least twice more before he left, to read it to the kid every night, to impress on her how important the monster words were to Tad. On his way out, he saw the closet door was open, just a crack. He closed the door firmly and left his son's room. Sometime much later that evening, the door swung open again. Heat lightning flickered sporadically, tattooing crazy shadows in there. But Tad did not wake. The next day, at 7:15 in the morning, Steve Kemp's van backed out onto Route 11. Steve made miles, heading for Route 302. There he would turn left and drive southeast, crossing the state to Portland. He intended to flop at the Portland YMCA for a while. On the van's dashboard was a neat pile of addressed mail, not printed in block letters this time, but typed on his own machine. The typewriter was now in the back of the van, along with the rest of his stuff. It had taken him only an hour and a half to pack in his Castle Rock operation, including Bernie Carbo, who was now snoozing in his box by the rear doors. He and Bernie traveled light. The typing job on the envelopes was a professional one. 16 years of creative writing had turned him into an excellent typist, if nothing else. He pulled over to the same box from which he had posted the anonymous note to Vic Trenton the night before and dropped the letters in. It would not have bothered him in the least to run out owing rent on the shop and the house if he had intended to leave the state, but since he was only going as far as Portland, it seemed prudent to do everything legally. This time he could afford not to cut corners. There was better than $600 in cash tucked into the small bolt hole behind the van's glove compartment. In addition to a check covering the rent he owed, he was returning deposits to several people who had made them on bigger jobs. Accompanying each check was a polite note saying he was very sorry to have caused any inconvenience, but his mother had been taken suddenly and seriously ill. Every red-blooded American was a sucker for a mom story. Those for whom he had contracted to do work could pick up their furniture at the shop. The key was on the ledge above the door, just to the right, and would they kindly return the key to the same place after they had made their pickup? Thank you, blah-de-blah, bullshit, bullshit. There would be some inconvenience, but no real hassle. Steve dropped the letters into the mailbox. There was that satisfied feeling of having his ass well covered. He drove away toward Portland, singing along with the Grateful Dead who were delivering sugary. He pushed the van up to 55, hoping traffic would stay light so he could get to Portland early enough to grab a quart at Tennis of Maine. All in all, it looked like a good day. If Mr. Businessman hadn't received his little letter bomb yet, he surely would today. Nifty, Steve thought, and burst out laughing. At 7:30, as Steve Kemp was thinking tennis, and Vic Trenton was reminding himself to call Joe Camber about his wife's balky pinto, Charity Camber was fixing her son's breakfast. Joe had left for Lewiston half an hour ago, hoping to find a 72 Camaro windshield at one of the city's automobile junkyards or used parts outfits. This jived well with Charity's plans, which she had made slowly and carefully. She put Brett's plate of scrambled eggs and bacon in front of him, and then sat down next to the boy. Brett glanced up from the book he was reading in mild surprise. After fixing his breakfast, his mother usually started on her round of morning chores. If you spoke to her too much before she got herself around a second cup of coffee, she was apt to show you the rough side of her tongue. "Can I talk to you a minute, Brett?" Mild surprise turned to something like amazement. Looking at her, he saw something utterly foreign to his mother's taciturn nature. She was nervous. He closed his book and said, "Sure, Mom." "Would you like..." She cleared her throat and began